Good morning. I don't know if you ever take a look at your family tree. If you do, you might find many surprises in it. Some good ones, some less good, some hidden away. I've been working in our family tree for some years, prompted by Eden's homework some years ago. And I have a database now of over 500 people. Who'd you believe there's that many Rogerses, huh? And it's been exciting to discover my great-great-grandfather, Jonah, for the first time, and even discover my great-great-great-grandfather, Richard Rogers, who was born in 1797 in Somerset. And I started this procedure of putting my family tree together by looking at the existing paper documents in the family. And I found that a family archivist, I think it was my great-aunt, had added a few pithy editorial comments describing Victorian members of our family, the Rogers clan. Here are a few examples. Gambler, staunch Methodist, drunkard. All feature in her descriptions. They don't all apply to the same person, you'll be glad to hear. And there's plenty of family tree in the book of Ruth. We might subtitle chapter 4 that we've just heard read to us, How King David Got His Grandfather. And there are plenty of surprises in this family tree too. Now, we've been hearing episodes from the Book of Ruth over recent weeks and months. And I've listened to sermons on Ruth for a number of years, and I've always got a bit confused about who was who was doing what, and where they were coming from. So I thought that a story so far might be quite helpful, assisted by Ruth's family tree, which I hope we might be able to get up on the screen here. Ruth's family tree, there it is, of those that are mentioned in the story. So here's the story so far. Naomi and Elimelech live in Bethlehem with their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, their names meaning weak and pining. Nice names. They they have no food in Bethlehem. Bethlehem means house of bread, so they move to Moab. Elimelech then dies, leaving Naomi a widow with two sons. The sons marry Moabite women, Ruth and Orpah. I hope you're following it up on here. And after 10 years, Naomi's two sons die, leaving her a widow with no male heir in a man's world with two daughters-in-law who are also widows. Finally, they discover that there is food in Bethlehem. It's living up to its name. So Naomi returns to her hometown with very few prospects, so she thinks. And so she gives Ruth and Orpah, her daughter-in-laws, the option to leave and stay in Moab. After some persuading, Orpah does leave, but Ruth stays or even clings to Naomi. Imagine her clinging on to Naomi's leg, although that's probably not how it worked, but that is in my mind. And they return to Bethlehem at harvest time, which is significant in the story. Ruth goes off and does some gleaning in the fields of Bethlehem to try and provide for her and Naomi, where she meets Boaz, a respected member of the community, an older man who treats her kindly. Naomi plans with Ruth to make things happen romantically with Boaz. Ruth follows her advice, takes the initiative, and proposes marriage to Boaz on the threshing floor. And Boaz is very pleased and promises to settle matters quickly. So that's where we got to last time. Tune in for this week's episode. This is a love story in every way and in many senses. I've heard Ruth described as a charming story, but I think that diminishes Ruth. It's much more than a charming story. It is a love story for all of us, for those who think themselves powerless in a world run by and for others. It's a love story for those who don't fit in with the way things are. It's a story for those who are overwhelmed by life and consider themselves empty. It's a story for those who wonder where God has got to. And so also it's a story about loyalty and kindness, about care for those on the edge, about hope, and how these very good things come from God, even if we don't always see it. So let's start by thinking about loyalty and kindness, which runs through the story of Ruth as a very strong theme. It's a kindness that goes beyond what's expected and what is sensible. It's a kindness that emerges within a relationship where one person is able to act to help another in need. And sometimes we might think of kindness as being a bit wishy-washy, as being nice, a bit harmless. But kindness in Ruth is actually about practical actions for those who are in need. It's a kindness that involves risk and reputation, as we see in this story in chapter 4. Boaz and Ruth are examples of kindness and loyalty that are to be the mark of the people of God, now as then. It's a theme developed in the New Testament of the church as well. Kindness is one of the fruit of the Spirit in which all Christians should be growing. And we see this kindness in Ruth and Orpah's kindness to Naomi in chapter 1 of the book, Boaz's kindness to Ruth and God's kindness to all, both living and dead, in chapter 2, Ruth's loyalty to Boaz in chapter 3 because she doesn't chase after the younger men, so it says. And so now we see Boaz's kindness in action in chapter 4 through immediately seeking to settle matters, as Naomi confidently predicts at the end of chapter 3. But as in all good love stories, there is a hitch. A closer guardian redeemer or kinsman redeemer has emerged late in the story with a prior claim on Naomi and Ruth. You might think Jane Austen had a hand in this story somewhere. Will the boy get the girl? Or given Ruth's effective marriage proposal in chapter 3, will the girl get the boy? When you got up this morning, I'm sure you thought to yourself, what I need is a dose of legal proceedings from the ancient Near East, especially the custom of levirate marriage. Isn't that what you were thinking? Isn't that right? Yeah. Well, the good news is I have some of that for you, but I'll keep it short. In fact, we have 10 verses of our chapter, nearly half of it, which are about these pretty arcane aspects of Israelite law, and I've discovered that most biblical scholars are unclear about the technicalities of what takes place. But first of all, we can say that these 10 verses make a point about kindness. That it may not be very exciting or sexy, but possibly rather detailed, dull, and protracted. The kindness may well be in the detail. What we can also say about verses 1 to 10 is that in ancient Israel, as it sort of hints at in the passage, if a man died without having a son, he had no one to inherit his property. Women could not inherit property. And so what would happen is that the man's brother would then marry the widow with the hope that they would then produce a son to inherit the property and the wealth of that man. Hope you're following me. But the thing is, Boaz is not Elimelech's brother. As we can see on the family tree, there's a dotted line between them. We know that they're relatives in some way, but they're not brothers. They're not that close. So there's a bit of a variant on what's on that theme in chapter 4, and we're not quite sure exactly how the legal proceedings work. But it would seem that Boaz is not required to redeem Ruth or Naomi, but motivated by Ruth's loyalty, initiative, attractiveness — Ruth might mean beauty in the name — and he continues to put kindness into practice by arranging redemption. We discover that Naomi does, in fact, have some land. Although as a widow with no heirs, it remains in her husband's name, Elimelech, in some sort of land limbo. Now, what's also interesting in this passage is that the closer guardian redeemer, I think it's kinsman redeemer, in verse 1 that you've got there, he is not named, but he's deliberately kept anonymous. And I'm told that it's best translated — I think we've got my friend in our version — but the best translation would be Mr. So-and-so. Very anonymous. The one who does not redeem, who does not show kindness, is deliberately not named. He is anonymous, perhaps to save his face in the story. And so Mr. So-and-so loses interest in the deal once he discovers that Ruth the Moabite is involved. That might be because she's a Moabite, and we'll say more about that later. But it's more likely that if he were to marry Ruth and have a son, then that son would eventually inherit the land and everything else he has, putting his existing family's security at risk. Okay, the legal discussions are now over, okay? But I thought it'd be worth just pulling out one or two points from verses 1 to 10. In redeeming Ruth and Naomi, Boaz demonstrates a very particular kindness. Boaz, as redeemer, illustrates what Redeemer has meant for the people of God since. the one who cares for his family through effort and use of resources in order to rebuild the lives of those in the family when needed. And we see God acting in this way to Israel also, and to the whole world in Christ. God chooses to make us part of his family when he didn't have to, at enormous cost to himself, to rebuild our lives. And so the story asks questions of us. How do we demonstrate this practical kindness to others? How good are we at receiving kindness? How do we grow in such kindness? And how do we give thanks to God for his kindness to us? There's a second theme that's quite striking in this book and in the passage today, is the concern we see for those on the edge. The widows, the poor, the foreigner. And Ruth was all of these. Such a status put her right on the edges of society, in a precarious state. She had little security. She was destitute and vulnerable. We've seen earlier in Ruth that she was able to glean or pick up the leftover grain from the fields. And this was a requirement of the law in the Bible, the Israelite law. The harvesters should leave grain for the poor to pick up. It was a support measure for the poor. And in chapter 4 here, we see how security or rest is provided for Naomi and Ruth by the guardian redeemer in bringing them into his family. And care for those on the edge is a very strong theme of the Old Testament. In Deuteronomy 10, for example, God is the one who defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow, and loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing. You are to love those who are foreigners, for you yourselves were foreigners in Egypt. In the New Testament also, we see the early church working to include those of different ethnic backgrounds, where there was to be no Jew or Greek. As a foreigner, a Moabite, Ruth was in a particularly difficult position. She was an economic migrant, perhaps facing starvation and looking for a home in Israel. But Israelites had particularly been warned against fraternizing with Moabites. The story of the Moabite origins goes back to quite an unpleasant episode in Genesis chapter 19, when Lot gets drunk and his daughters sleep with him, and Moab is one of the results. So you can imagine the attitude of Israelites to Moabites. There was also tradition in Israel that marriages should not include those from outside the community. For example, Jacob goes off to find a wife amongst his own people. But in Ruth, we see how the people of God through Boaz include Ruth in the community. And you notice in the passage how Ruth has the title the Moabitess, the Moabite, again and again in the passage. Ruth doesn't hide her identity at all. He's actually quite loud and proud about it, doesn't he? Verse 3, verse 5, verse 10, Ruth the Moabite. He's almost like rubbing it in their face, isn't he? She is not one of us. She's from somewhere else. She's not suitable. But I want to include her in this community. And including Ruth in this story is done with great enthusiasm. Look at the prayer in verses 11 and 12. It's like this wonderful chorus of praise and welcome for Ruth and Boaz's marriage. When all the people and all the elders at the gate pray for Boaz and Ruth, they compare her to Rachel and Leah. High praise for Israelites indeed. And later in the chapter, in verse 15b, she is said to be worth more than seven sons. Again, high praise. Truly, Ruth is welcome and found a home. Now, despite the many differences between the society at that time and that of 21st century Britain, there are some very sharp challenges for us here, aren't there? How will we work to ensure that those on the edge of our society are cared for? What will our attitude be towards those who are migrants, destitute, who have lost their families? How will we welcome the fatherless, the motherless, the widow, and the foreigner? The third theme, which is the one that really struck me when I reread Ruth for this talk, was Naomi's journey through the book and the changes she experiences from chapter 1 to chapter 4. It's a journey from despair to hope, from despair to hope. In chapter 1, we see Naomi's life fall apart, not unlike the story of Job. She loses her home, then her husband, then her two sons. She says in chapter 1, "The hand of the Lord has turned against me. I'm no longer Naomi," meaning pleasant, "but I am Mara," bitter. "Because God has dealt with her bitterly and harshly," she says, "and God has brought calamity upon her," she says. And Naomi has returned home, but she says she has returned empty, which of course is a bit rude to Ruth, who's come with her, but you know, we'll leave that one aside. Naomi's situation has overwhelmed her, and we can well understand why that might be. And in the rest of the book, we see how light breaks in on Naomi's darkness, how despair does not have the last word for Naomi. And a lot of this is to do with Ruth, who won't let Naomi go and won't stop being kind to her. And a key turning point for Naomi is in chapter 2, verse 20, when Ruth reveals to Naomi that Boaz is the one in whose field she has been working and has given her grain. And Naomi exclaims at that point, "The Lord bless him," and then says, "The Lord has not stopped showing kindness." Through the kindness of Boaz to Ruth, Naomi regains some hope. And then in chapter 3, Naomi has gained enough hope to take the initiative with Ruth and to do a little matchmaking with her shy kinsman. And at the end of chapter 3, Naomi is so confident in Boaz's character, she says, "Well, I'm sure he's going to do the right thing and settle matters quickly." And then in chapter 4, we discover that Naomi wasn't as quite as empty as she had made out. She had Ruth for a start, who'd obviously forgiven her for the slight we have in chapter 1. But not only that, she had land, and not just one guardian redeemer, but two turn up. The climax of Naomi's journey comes in verse 14 onwards of chapter 4, where the women of Bethlehem bless the Lord for providing for Naomi. You see, verse 17, she has a son. I think we need to apologize to Ruth, who actually had to do the labor, but we get the point, even if Obed is Naomi's step-grandson. And verse 15, very importantly, says of Obed this, that he will renew your life, or be a restorer of life, literally meaning to bring back. It reverses the despairing language of chapter 1, verse 21, where Naomi says that God has brought her back from Moab empty. No, he hasn't. God has brought her back. And it echoes the language of restoring my soul in Psalm 23 as well. And so the journey from chapter 1 to chapter 4 for Naomi is one of from despair to hope. God has brought Naomi back. In fact, given how the story tracks Naomi's journey, we might call this book Naomi as much as Ruth. For Naomi then, she moved from despair to hope. She was brought back and her life renewed. And that's not to make light of Naomi's bereavements, which were many. And nor does the book of Ruth promise the same happy ending for all the people of God. What it does point to is that the God working behind the scenes of Ruth can and will renew our lives from despair to hope, whatever our situation. The final theme or question I want to raise from the story of Ruth and Naomi is to ask, what is God doing? What is God doing in this book and story? At first sight, it might seem that God is rather absent from the book of Ruth. We're only told of two occasions when God acts in the story, at the beginning in chapter 1, where he provides food, and at the end in chapter 4, where he enables Ruth to conceive. Bear in mind that she didn't have any children for 10 years with her previous husband. But God is talked about many times by the people in the story. But if we take another look at Ruth, we can see signs of God at work. There are a number of coincidences for a start. Ruth just happens to glean in the field belonging to Boaz in chapter 2, her relative and guardian redeemer. Boaz just happens to go to the city gate at the same time as Mr. So-and-so is passing by in chapter 4, so matters can be settled quickly. God is at work, often behind the scenes of the story and through the principal characters, Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz. And we see a similar experience for Joseph and the story of Joseph, of seeing God working in the background and intending it for good. I am aware of a number of occasions in my life when apparent coincidences turn out to be instances of God nudging me in the right direction. And I'm sure many of us recognize the experience of Ruth and Naomi of not knowing where the path leads, but just getting on with the journey. And then beginning to see God's kindness and care towards us later on as we look back. In the book of Ruth, then, we see how God works through the lives of ordinary people to achieve great things. What great things might there be here? I don't think it's a small thing to transform the lives of even a few people or even one person, such as Naomi. But the story does not finish there. Ruth's son is Obed, we're told in verse 17, and he becomes the father of Jesse, the father of King David. And according to Matthew's gospel, David was the ancestor of Jesus. It drives home the message that God uses ordinary people and sometimes, or even often, the most unlikely people, even a Moabite. After all, it turns out that David's great-great-great-grandmother wasn't even Jewish. Therefore, Ruth, Naomi, and Boaz, ordinary people getting on with living their lives before God, are caught up in God's much wider and larger purposes for Israel and for the whole world. Boaz, in redeeming Naomi and Ruth, plays a part in God's redemption plan for all of us. So this is how King David got his grandfather. And I have a feeling that Naomi in particular would have appreciated the following song by her great-great-stepson. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my life. He leads me in right paths for his name's sake. Amen.